It's been a couple of years since we've done in Yad Binyamin. I think the last time we did this was maybe 6 years ago or 7 years ago. So I thought this year was a good opportunity to do something again and maybe take a little bit of a different twist. Meaning that we'll do tonight. We're going to do one shiur as a review of some of the Hilchos Nida aspects. And the next couple shiurim, as I think you saw already, we're going to take a different direction and talk a little bit more about interactions between men and women, and a couple other interesting things, which I'll talk to you about a little bit later. Okay, her pacifier.
In your mouth, adult.
Yeah, in her mouth. Yeah, definitely. You don't have to, but I'm saying it probably will help. Oh, okay, thank you. Hopefully, you can still. Okay, just a little bit of an introduction to Shovim, which you mentioned last time. So Shovim is an important period of time on the Jewish calendar. According to Kabbalah, Kabbalah starts from Kabbalah, Arizal, through the Sefer Chassidus. It's a time which is used for Tikkun Hamidos, fixing certain types of character traits. Many of the Sfarim bring down issues related to trying to work on your Taras HaMishpacha, Hilchos Nida, as we said, issues of Kedusha, trying to increase the holiness in your life, which again relates to some of the other things we mentioned, of the issues of arayas, of interactions between men and women. There's other issues also that are mentioned. Some people fast during this time, which again is not so common these days. Many fasting things that are, you know, customs that came about for tanis, for fasting, have not been kept so much in our day, but there are other ways that many people develop this. It's mentioned in the Magen Avraham and the Be'er Hetev and the Shaar HaTshuva all mention, you know, different things about the time period of Shovavim. The Sefer Chassidus also, the Piskei Tshuvos mentions a number of other Sefer Chassidus in Siman Tufresh Pehe. He had a whole Torah about this. About Gashmius, they talk about trying to limit your Gashmius, again with the idea of Kedusha. A lot of different ideas that have developed over the years in terms of Shovavim. I'm going to leave it at this, but one little note which I saw in the B'Shev magazine last week, which is interesting to think about. I don't know what we would want to do with this, if anything, but one of the Rabbanim that wrote in B'Shev last week, if you saw it, suggested something about a Tanit internet instead of a physical fast. But to having an internet fast, internet tanit, which again is funny, but you understand where he's coming from. I didn't actually read the article, okay, to be honest.
I'd rather fast with food.
Nope. Excuse me? Good, all right. So you'll lead us in that. Anyways, I didn't have a chance to read his article, but the idea looked very interesting. Meaning, if you're talking about Kedusha, and we know, unfortunately, that, you know, the internet, for all, it does a lot of good things for us, and both in terms of Torah and in terms of also for other daily things, but there's also a lot of potential danger, as we all know. And it's not a bad idea to think about, which again, I'm not saying it's practical because a lot of us use internet for work. But if there's any way to think about for us and our kids, even for a couple hours, to say we're going to turn the computer off or turn the internet off, you know, whatever that means, it's an idea to consider. Okay. Something just to put in your head to think about for now or for later. Okay. That's our little introduction. What we're going to do now is basically go through a number of selected topics in Hilchos Nida. Hilchos Nida obviously is very big. There's a lot of different stuff. The shiur I gave about 6 or 7 years ago, that's serious. So I still have the notes on that. If you want to see the notes, I'm happy to forward it to email it to everybody here. Originally, I think it was on YU Torah also, but I think it was too long ago. I think it was 7 years ago. They got rid of it. I couldn't find it there. But I have a bunch of notes here. If anybody's interested in seeing the notes, you can let me know. I can send it to you. But I'll tell you the topics that we're going to go through here. Basically, are topics which are selected and hopefully are important and practical for many of us at this time. And again, if you have any other questions, you feel free to pop in. Since Rav Orlean is here, so Orlean will be my partner in crime here. Meaning, I'm going to give the shiur, but you're welcome to pop to say anything you want at any time, either to correct me or to add anything or to give a different perspective. Please, that's why we're both here. You know, it's not just for me giving shiur, and I'm sure he would say the same thing if whenever shiur you actually you're giving the shalom bayis shiur, so I won't interrupt for that one. If any other shiur that come up, would you say? Yeah, but this is a better shiur for Hosafos and Ha'aros. Okay, so let's go. One point before, also, I forgot to mention this before. I think you mentioned this a couple of years ago as well. Just, I think it's important for husbands to be involved in the halachas of Taras Mishpacha. Again, obviously, the female is the one who's the main onus is on her for making sure that she's doing what she's supposed to be doing. But the same way that, as far as I know, studies say that husbands that help out in the kitchen or with other things in the house generally there are often have a more effective marriage than those that don't. Again, I'm not saying that anybody's good or bad for doing or not doing, but there is such a study out there. For the exact source, you'll have to ask me later. If that's correct, then one could argue that the same thing is true here also, that the idea of cooperation and camaraderie that you have for marriage in general, and especially in terms of taras ha-mishpacha, is very important for strengthening the bond between husband and wife. And therefore, even if the males, we are not the ones that are going through it, but any way that we can help out, offer support, be involved in the halachos in whatever possible way that is. So that's definitely a very, very recommended thing, at least in my mind. Okay. All right, so let's start here with a couple points. All right, start with we'll go backwards here. We'll go backwards. I mean, it's not in any specific order. Okay, a bunch of issues, not in any specific order. Let's start with an issue of harchakos. Okay, so harchakos we know is the concept that a husband and wife, not only are they prohibited from having relations from each other during the period when she is anita, but they also have to separate in other ways as well. Okay? There cannot be physical contact. Certainly affectionate contact and even non-affectionate contact is prohibited during this time. Indirect contact, we know, also is prohibited. All the things about passing, which again, I'm sure most of you are familiar with this. You can't pass things from one to another. Sitting on a bench together is also very problematic. Other types of harchakos in terms of how you eat, that if you eat together without anybody else nearby, then you have to have a heker, you have to put something on the table. If you have other people nearby, it's a question. Again, there's lots of things here. I'm just going to take one particular issue that is interesting that comes up that we'll discuss right now in terms of harchakos. And that is the question of, can the husband hear his wife singing during the period of nida? Okay, the question of kol isha for the husband, not for other males, but for the husband. So what does anybody want to offer any thoughts before I speak up?
It comes up because, you know, not to say like the wife likes to sing. I'm saying,
right. Only theoretical, right? Not right, even.
Yeah, but that's the issue, whether Kalisha applies to at the Shabbos table.
Oh, okay. So
in general.
Right. Phil knows a lot about this right now. But anyway, so the most common case where Kalisha is a question in this situation of Nida is probably the Shabbos table. Okay. During the week, if your wife is a singer or she likes to, you know, sing along, or in my case, if she's singing to the baby, so I guess that's the most practical, you know, during the week. But in general, I think the Shabbos table, singing at that time is really the most common case. And the question is, is there any problem with that during the time period of Nida? And the question together with that is also, is there any problem with that the rest of, not a situation of Nida, but any other female who's not your wife and is not your daughter, who's singing at the Shabbos table, is that a problem? So we're not going to focus so much on the second question. That is a major, major question. Can you hear other women singing at the Shabbos table that are not your family immediate relatives? The basic answer is that many posts can hold that it's usur, but there are some that are mekil and hold that it's okay for a number of different reasons. We're not going to go into this now, but just so you know what some of the reasons are, either because it's Shirei Kodesh, it's songs, zmiros are supposed to help you get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if you're singing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the idea is that you're not going to be, you're not going to have the same type of hirhurim of thoughts when you hear somebody else sing at the same time when you're busy trying to sing your zmiros. That's number one. Number two, maybe that if there are multiple people are singing together, so that's a possible reason why it might be more makil. If you have five people singing, definitely men is better. Right. Meaning if multiple men and women are singing, is definitely better. If you're singing, it also makes it better. If you're singing, so you're singing yourself, so you're not as much listening to somebody else. And there are some also that say that if there are multiple women singing, that also it makes it better. Again, I can't say that a lot of posts agree with that, but there is such an opinion out there. And if you put everything together, so there definitely is ample room to allow it. Whether it should be mutter l'chadchila to encourage it, I didn't say that, okay? What I would say is that if you're at a table where women are singing on Shabbos, I don't think you need to, like, shush them up, okay? You don't need to make them feel bad. Just make sure that you're also singing. That would be my personal recommendation. But again, there are different opinions about this, okay? You can definitely find a range of opinions when it comes to that particular point. That being said, the question is, what's the issue of Nida? Okay, so put that issue aside for a second and just focus on Nida now. Is there a problem if your wife is singing all by herself? Is there a problem for Kol Isha when it comes to Zmiros? So, the answer is, as you could guess, it's Machlokas. Okay, very good. All right. It happens to be that here are the following Makoros that I saw. Okay, and there might be more. The Pischei Tshuva, one of the commentators on the Shulchan Aruch, so he's not sure. He says, it could be it's a problem. It could be it's not a problem. What's the logic behind it? Meaning, why would you think that it is a problem? So the main idea, probably guess. I mean, what would be the issue of kolisha? Why would it be a problem?
Anything that's endearing could be an issue.
Okay. Not only that, but also the same way that you're not allowed to look at your wife in places which are what's called mekomos hamechusim, okay, covered areas that are not usually exposed. So those, you're not allowed to look at those areas of your wife when she's anita. So they say the same thing as well, the same way that kolish also is something which could lead to erva. It's something which is could be, you know, tempting in a certain way. At least that's how it's looked at in the halachic makaros. So they say that that also maybe should be a problem in the same way. And that's what the Pesachei Tshuva is not sure about. And believe it or not, there are many poskim that say that it's usur. Okay, they don't even discuss it. They say it's usur. Okay, the Aruch HaShulchan is one of them. Even Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Tshuva Nigros Moshe in Yoredei HaChelek Beis, so in Ayin Hey, so he basically says that it's usur. Okay, basically, it's the same thing as any other issues of arayos during Nida, and the same way that your wife cannot expose certain parts of her body that are usually covered. So he says here also she can't sing. I saw in the Bari HaShulchan also, Rav Cohen. So he also says that basically it's usur, even if you're singing Zmiros, meaning not just singing, but even Zmiros specifically, he says it's a problem. Rabbi Forst, okay, in the Hilchos Nida book, page 108. So he also says basically that it's usur. Okay, he says, I'll read you his language. I have it right here. This one I can read you. He says, a husband may not listen to his wife singing while she is a Nida. She should not even sing Shabbos Zmiros in his presence. Okay, and he quotes the Bari HaShulchan, also the Shema HaLevi, and Shema Bav. He may not even listen to a tape recording of her singing if he is doing so for enjoyment. Okay, I don't know how common that is to listen to your wife singing on a recording for enjoyment. All right, but basically that's what he says here. Okay, so it seems like a lot of poskim say that this is really a problem because of this issue of arayos. However, there are other poskim that say that it's mutter. Okay, Rav Avadia, I believe it's in Taras Abaye, so he's Megill. This I didn't see in the cyber. I saw Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach was quoted supposedly as saying that it's mutter. I don't remember even where I saw it. I didn't write it down for some reason. But he apparently said it was mutter as well. And Rabbi Willig from YU, so I know, you know, I've heard him personally. So he says also that it's mutter.
Same as the woman covering her head.
Ah, excellent, Ben. Beautiful. So that's what they say. If they ask, well, what's the logic? Meaning, why is this any different than Mekomos HaMechusim? Okay, normally speaking, Kolisha is a problem for another woman. So maybe it should be a problem for your wife also, if she's a Nida. So basically what they say is the same question applies if you talk about hair covering. Meaning, when your wife is a Nida, is she allowed to walk around at home with her hair uncovered if you're going to see her? So what's the answer? The answer is, we generally say yes. There are some posts that disagree, by the way. Okay, there are definitely posts that are machmir. But our general minhag is to be mekil. Okay, meaning if your wife generally walks around at home, at least sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, she walks around with her hair uncovered, even if it's just you, at certain times, so then you're used to it. It's something which is not going to cause cure for you because it's something that you see all the time. So basically what they argue is if that's the case, the same logic should apply as well to a woman singing Zmiros, or singing in general, and certainly if she's singing Zmiros, if she sings generally, you know, Zmiros every week or every other week, or once a month, whatever it is, so then you're used to it. It's something which is normal for you. It's not something which is going to cause additional kirhur, and therefore it would be permissible for her to do so. So if you ask me, I think that's, you know, again, there is a suffix here, but I think there's, you know, that svara makes a lot of sense, at least in my mind. Personally, I think there's room to rely on that without feeling bad, not feeling like you're looking for kulas. I think that's a very, very legitimate kula. If you want to be machmir, if your wife wants to be machmir, you know, gesunter hey, that's totally fine. That's great, but certainly, I think this kula is a very solid kula, even though, you know, a lot of poskim don't agree with it. Any other comments about this point? Any questions about it before we go on? Other opinions?
So the eitzah, if the wife is singing, to sing along with her.
So right. So let me just add a good point. So let me just add in basically, in addition to everything we just said now for Nida, everything we said before, all the reasons why it may be permissible to begin with for other women to sing at the Shabbos table, you can add in here as well. I mean, if you're singing along, that certainly makes it better. If there's multiple singers in your house, you know, there's five people singing at the same time, that definitely makes it better. The fact that it's Shirei Kodesh, again, you know, it's one factor, but when you factor it together with everything else here, I think that also causes, you know, enough room to be makil, that makes it better. And again, you know, if you want, you know, you definitely, it's definitely good to sing along. You know, but again, I don't think we usually have cases of where the woman is singing solo, even for Zmiros. It's just her singing. You know, you go solo now, and we'll all listen. Not so common like that. And it's not so nice like that. If you want to sing Zmiros, you should have everybody singing together. So I think that's, yeah, it's a point well taken. All right. Okay. Right. 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 Yeah. Yes, that's a right. That's a general point in Kolisha also, which again is not really our issue right now, but yeah. Yeah.
specifically if you want to make the parallel to looking.
Right.
Incident to looking.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Looking at gazing. Listening also, like, the sort of analogy between the hearing and
right.
listening.
Okay, yeah, so that is mentioned also, that if you're not directly listening, which I think anyway, when you're talking about Zmiros, that probably happens automatically, because if you're singing along, then for Zmiros at least, then it shouldn't be, you shouldn't be specifically listening to her, but during the week, I think Rav Force actually mentioned S here, I don't see it right now, but I think he mentioned that if she's singing to the baby, I don't know where I saw it, maybe it wasn't here, it was somewhere else, if she's singing to the baby, then somebody says that, I think the Rav Karelitz says he should just try not to listen. Meaning try not to pay attention specifically. Meaning you're around, but you're doing something else that's not really on your mind, and you happen to hear, but you're not really focusing on it. So that's basically what Rav William is saying, the same way that, you know, for histoklis, for gazing, at least many posts can posit that it's basically the gaze rather than the incidental looking. So here also be the same thing. So that's another good factor. Okay. Good. All right. Next question. Let's talk about tefillah, okay? Again, this is not in any order whatsoever, okay? In terms of tefillah, so another common issue that comes up sometimes is tefillah, when one goes to the mikvah, we know that in general, the mitzvah is that tefillah should be on time, okay? If whatever night is the night, the proper night for tefillah, so we know that ideally she's supposed to go to the mikvah that night if possible. In terms of the halacha, so the Shulchan Aruch says that that if the husband is home, there's a mitzvah to be tovel at the right time. Whether there's a halachic concept of tefillah bizmana mitzvah, that there is actually a real mitzvah or an obligation to tovel that night, that's not so clear. When the Gemara talks about that, is that really what we're saying? The bottom line is that it's not really an absolute obligation to tovel that night. But basically what we're saying is that even though it's not an absolute obligation, that's not when the Gemara says tefillah bizmana mitzvah, it means an absolute obligation. We say it means basically la halacha, that you're supposed to, ideally, and you're really supposed to try, but it doesn't mean it's an absolute obligation. And because of that reason, there are therefore exceptions to the rule. Okay, the question is, you know, when would be the exceptions to the rule? Okay, ideally everybody agrees she should go the night that she's supposed to go. The question is sometimes things come up, and how far can you go in terms of allowing the tefillah to be pushed off by a night? So, if you want to volunteer, yes.
Let's say, you know, the husband's out of town. You're going to be out of town for 3 days, and after the night or the tefillah. Is it better for her to go tonight?
Okay.
Deal, or just wait until he gets back in
good.
Town?
Okay. Or so we'll start with that case, yeah.
You're in a place where the mikvah is nowhere nearby, and you have to walk, you know, 10 miles to get to it's Friday night, get 10 miles
okay.
to get to the nearest ocean. And,
and it's January.
And it's January, and the ocean is frozen. Right over there. I hope this wasn't practical for anybody here, was it?
California. Mine had a nicer
mikvah. Oh, wow. Wow.
We went to a lake. We talked to the rabbi. It was a free water lake. Whatever.
Wow. Okay. Sounds very interesting. Again, unfortunately, it does come up in certain places in the world. Hopefully here in Yabidim, we don't have this problem. I think we're okay here. But yeah, if it's a real issue, then one has to talk to their posik, because it's very complex. The answer is it can be done, but it's a little complex. No, I'm saying you can go to a mikvah ocean, or it's a little complicated. You can do it in terms of delaying. So we'll put it this way, if it's doable to go at night, it's recommended. But if, let's say, it's scary, it's dangerous, it's freezing cold or whatever, so that is one of the cases that may be permissible to delay it, meaning to do it during the daytime. But because that's not our practical case here in Yabidim, I'm not going to focus on that case. That's something that a person has to talk to their posik to deal with their specific situation in order to be able to confirm that it's really okay in that, you know, given case, and not that there might be other ideas that they haven't thought of. Okay. So here, halacha lemasa for us, we'll start with your case of the husband is out of town. Okay, if the husband is out of town, so again, this happens from time to time for some of us, you know, more than others, I guess. Actually, for me, not, but some of us here do go traveling from time to time, so or more than time to time. So is the wife supposed to tovel when the husband is not home? So it's clear from the Shulchan Aruch I read you before. You can even take it out. If anybody has the Shulchan Aruch here, it's behind you, so we have it. We can look at it later. Where did it go? I think it's right there somewhere. Mm-hmm. That's the Torah. I'm sorry. Is that next to you? Oh, it's in the men's section. Okay, fine. So forget it. We don't need it. We could do without it. It's fine. Basically, what he says is that if the husband is home, then there's a mitzvah for the wife to go tovel. Clear implication being that if the husband is not home, so she's not required to go. Why not? Because, well, if he's not home, you know, there's not going to be any mitzvah of ona, of having relations, if he's not there. Okay? So based on that, the halacha is that she doesn't have to go if he's not home. The question is, should she go? Should she try to go? Does she need to try the sheet? Is it better to try to go, or is it better to wait? So here, basically, many poskim say that not only does she not have to go, but maybe it's better not to go. Al pi Kabbalah, there are many that say that al pi Kabbalah, it's not appropriate to go when the husband is not home. There is a custom that some people have to stick a knife under their pillow if the husband's not home when she goes to the mikvah. Again, this is out there. I don't know exactly what the source is, but there is such an idea out there. I wouldn't recommend it for obvious reasons, but for many obvious reasons, actually, more than one. We won't go into that in Kan Malaharach. In Kan Bakum Harach, sorry. But anyway, so that is mentioned. The Shuri Shevet HaLevi Rav Vosner in his Sefer, so he mentions that maybe it's better not to go. However, there are some that say that definitely if she wants to, she can go the night that he's not home. And some even recommend it. I heard from Rabbi Willig, he felt that it actually is better to go on the night that she's supposed to go. Why is that? Not because she has to, but mainly because sometimes things come up. So let's say the husband's coming back a couple of days later, and she thinks she's going to go later, but in the end something goes wrong. He gets delayed, and then it's too late, and the kids are this, and who knows what. So then already you lost the night. So at least in Ray Williams' opinion, and this makes a lot of sense, though again, it's obviously has to be adapted to every case individually. It's not a blanket recommendation, but there's something to think about. It could be that it's recommended to go before he comes home if you think there's a chance, or even if you think there's not, but there might be a chance that something might come up, and then it'll end up getting delayed by an additional night. After he comes home, or if you know he's coming home the next day and there won't be time to go when he comes home, so go the night before. But again, practicality is obviously take consideration here. If there's nobody else to watch the kids, if the kids are younger, if it's just too difficult, or if the kids will notice, or all sorts of things. That's just something to keep in your minds that there is such an idea if there may be a chance that something will go wrong later. So there is what to be said against the minhag al pi Kabbalah. There may be some what to be said for going a little bit earlier. Yeah.
Sometimes a few husbands surprise their wives and come back early. They want to surprise their wife. I was supposed to come back, but I got an early ticket. Come back in such a situation.
That happens to you. What does your wife do when you're not home? That's the question. Okay, there's one no on that question. Anybody else have any thoughts about that question? Coming home early? No. Okay, let's see here.
One of the questions, obviously Shalom Bayit, this year was 7 years ago, kids were much younger in general.
Right.
So
right.
You mentioned kids noticing.
Okay, so that's my next point. Very good. All right. Let's say, forget the husband being out of town. The husband's home. But there's other reasons why things might go wrong, meaning that either there's a simcha, there's some other happening, not in the Israeli sense of the word, but there's some other event that's taking place that might make it difficult to go. Or again, as kids get older, so the kids are going to find out. So what should you do? So the answer is, I guess, multifaceted, as you might have guessed. Number one, there are differences of opinion in the poskim about how far you can go in terms of trying to delay your tefillah if something comes up. Okay, some poskim will say that if there's any reason why people publicly will find out, or any reason why practically that something is happening, you have some other event that's going on, so that you can delay it. Most poskim, I think, will say that l'chadchila, if it's just a regular event or some other thing which you can sort of avoid, you can come late or something, it's highly recommended to go to when you're supposed to go. Okay, I mean, you could start playing games here, meaning if you have an event, but you have a meeting or you have something else, but you can come half an hour late, or you can make an excuse why you can't come or anything like that. You should always, always, and this is my, my personal opinion based on what my Rabbim have said, you should always, always try to go if, she should always try to go when she can. Oh, so I knew somebody was going to ask that. We'll get to that in a second. That all you have to do is basically give an excuse, okay? If you give an excuse for where you're going somewhere else, then you can often get out of it, at least for a short amount of time. Now, the question is, can you lie? So the answer is maybe. The answer is that probably, make or din is probably mutter, meaning there are some situations where lying is mutter. Many poskim thought that this is probably one of them because this is an issue of shalom bias. But yeah, shalom bias, things where it's gonna, there's a major loss. All these kinds of cases where, was they? Depends what the mitzvah is. More shalom bias and what is that? Right. So you know, just explain what you're referring to, just people that don't are not familiar with.
Well, it says that there are three areas in which even people who are coming up some are supposed to be, you know, talking to those are very equal out of being an honest person. So it says that one of the three cases, the person sort of put on the spot, not, you know, she's being dirty or something, or something to the extent he can. It's not to lie, and then that can be a dishonest person. Maybe unless the person accounts for the sneer, so the front marriage should be covers up.
Right. So that's the Lamar and Bava Metzia. So it's
true. Yeah. You see all three areas. You see all three areas.
I think the other ones are not really relevant for now.
It's a Masechta, Pisa, I heard you're going, and you learned the 15 months after you went to Shas three times. No, I'm fine. And so, you know, but it's definitely not the most important knowledge. You do in terms of, it sounds a little bit funny, but it's like, you had a wonderful host, and you go around and people ask about it. So anyway, you know, this is the house to visit now that you're here. Sometimes people want to break, so you don't have to go before them. It's not, you know, there is an issue of trying to be private about this, but it's not like it's an issue for somebody to know. And as kids get older, they will know. You know, you try to do it in the as discreet manner as possible. It's not an issue, you don't have to go crazy. You know, there's sometimes a few people, when the women walk out, they make it again. You try to find the root which doesn't have, but it's not as if someone else, it's not the end of the world. It's not like there's this tremendous piece there. There's a certain element of, you know, certainly in terms of the women, you know, if they know that they're playing, obviously you don't want to have it on a regular basis, but like if they pick up here and there that there's a pile, all those things in between being a clear and it's being a possibility. Even if someone will suspect that something may be, in terms of lying, that's a question you have to balance the gain of that with the chance of, because sometimes people also learn to lie, which you also want to, you know, how terrible in person, you're going to a meeting against whenever a person's in a position where there's some effort to lie, to try to do it in as minimal a way. You can say you're going to meet someone, you have an appointment.
First one.
Now, these are all. if a person never, it's helpful if a person has a kind of thing where he goes out on occasion, does go out to shopping, does go out to a meeting, does go out. And something's helpful enough to always tell everybody, all the business in general. One more thing which isn't clear. A person's always telling every kid, every time, exactly where I'm going, it's a little bit harder to do. If in general not everything is always like, I have to go out for something. And, you know, kids can also learn that sometimes parents go out for reasons they don't feel that they need to explain. So it makes it easy in this area as well, because they have to go out somewhere, have to meet somebody. It's not, doesn't have to be. There are ways you have to tell somebody, you know, that I'm going to so and so's house, but I'm going to not. Now, to avoid straight out lying. Not the end of the world. That's some message I think is important to. Sometimes people do go overboard with that. I also hear some people going north. Typically, sometimes women are like so crazy about the fact that someone should find out. Some should with a person act with discretion and keep it discreet, keep it private. But it's not like there's an issue for someone to know. Even for children, it's not their business. The person should try as much as possible, but it's not like the end of the world.
Okay.
This raises a question in my mind. Is there any halacha on that a husband and wife should not, when they're allowed to be with each other, should not show physical, like normal physical warmth, the way you like hug your kids, or give an affectionate cheek to your kids, that type of thing between the husband and wife?
At home or in public?
No, at home. Is there any such thing that a husband should not do that in the house?
Yeah,
In front of the kids, I say. In front of the kids. When they're permitted. Or no.
I mean, this is maybe an issue for a later year, maybe not for this week.
You have a situation, which I think is what you're getting at this moment. Tell you have a situation for the husband and wife. Every time he comes home from work, he comes and the first thing he does, hi, dear. Hug and a kiss. And what? 2 weeks yes, and 2 weeks no. Uh-huh. 2 weeks yes, and 2 weeks no.
Right, so
again,
if that's what you mean, then right.
Discretion that it shouldn't right. always be obvious, you know, it shouldn't become a routine which is so obvious that it becomes very blatant when yes, when no.
Right? Yeah.
But outside of that, no problem.
Probably is fine. In public, there's more of a question. It's called Chiba Barabim. That's, you're familiar. Okay, so we won't go into that now. That may be a good topic for another week. Okay, so William basically covered most of the other points that I would have mentioned for now. I agree with basically everything he said, so I'm not going to repeat it. I'll just say, we've tried, you know, sometimes what can be done is, even if you don't, what William said about telling a half lie, always better. But sometimes you can always also find the way that the lie, that it's true to some extent, meaning you say, I'm going out for a meeting, or you say, I'm going to the store, and you go to the store, but you go for like 2 minutes. Or you don't, you know, you do something that which is, you know, not exactly what you said, but it's close enough that, you know, you can say you meet somebody. Okay, you met somebody in the street for 2 seconds. You know, I have to figure out what could be, but there are ways to do that. In terms of how much your kids know, also, there's another point which we may speak about in a couple of weeks. In terms of if they are not fully aware of what the mikvah experience is, should you tell them about it or not? And what should you say? That's another question, meaning we're already assuming that they know what it is. But if they don't know what it is yet, and they start wondering, where are you going? That's also a question, which I think we're not going to talk about tonight, but we may talk about it again in a couple of weeks. Okay, great. So the other points, again, were already mentioned, so I'm not going to go over them again. Okay, so let's go on. Next question. All right, this one is interesting. This is not so much for the men, but since it just came up recently, so I have to mention it. And then you can, just a couple of points. There's been a bit of a controversy lately about having a mikvah lady, if you're familiar with. All right, some of you are, some of you are not. Okay, I'm not going to go into the whole controversy because it's a little bit sensitive, I guess. What you know, you know, and what you don't, you don't. Basically, there was a law passed here in Israel, I forgot exactly how long ago it was, that basically, legally, a woman going to the mikveh does not have to have a mikveh lady, known as a balanit here, there when she's, during the tefillah. And basically, if you, somebody who forces a woman to have a balanit there, that's against the law. So that's caused a lot of controversy for obvious reasons. And unfortunately, here in Yabba Dimon, also, from what I understand, there's been some serious controversy about it here. Maybe we'll leave it at that, unless there's a reason to speak about it more. But just in terms of the halakha questions behind it, so I'll say my piece, and then, if you have anything to add, please do. Basically, just know in terms of halakha, again, I'm not the one here who's writing a sign on the mikvah telling you, but just halakha, you should just realize that halakha is very, very important that the mikvah lady be there. Just the way to understand that there's basically two points here, okay, two issues, and one is really more important than the other, okay? The less important case, where it's not as important, but I mean, it's good, but it's less important, is in terms of a woman checking herself before she goes into the mikveh, okay? There's a halacha that a woman has to, obviously, she has to wash and a whole series of things she has to do called chafifa, and part of what she needs to do is to check herself to make sure that she doesn't have any chatzitza, she doesn't have anything blocking, you know, her skin from touching the water. So there's a lot of things she has to check, her hair and her body and this and that. So she's supposed to check all those things. And the custom is generally that the mikveh lady is, at least part of the way that the woman checks, is having the mikveh lady check for her. You have just mentioned in a lot of this farm as being a common custom today, that the mikveh lady checks for her. She goes over, she looks at everything to make sure that it's fine. Why is that? Because the woman can't always do the best job herself when she's, you know, she's looking at her own body. In terms of the halacha, be aware that the main responsibility is actually on the woman herself, not on the mikveh lady. So really, she has to do it herself, and it may be that you don't need another person to do it, but practically, it's probably better and easier, it's safer, because, you know, she can see things that you can't, and just in case, you know, these are very serious issues, obviously, if there's a chatzitza, when it's not supposed to be there, then the tefillah may not be valid, and you don't want that. And either the husband or the wife, neither one wants that. So that's why, you know, it's become customary for the balanit to take care of that. However, in terms of that point, if that was only the issue by itself, then there is some room to say that maybe that's not necessary, because the woman, really, the main responsibility is on her, and she really has the obligation to check, and you don't need the other person. One could argue that. But the second issue is really the more important one in terms of the halacha, and that is that it's clear from the Shulchan Aruch that somebody has to watch the woman during the actual tefillah. Okay, meaning you have to have somebody there who watches her to make sure that her whole body goes in and that her hair goes in. That's really the main issue, to make sure that her hair is not on the surface the entire body has to be in the mikveh at the same time. So the Shulchan Aruch says in Kuf Tari Ches Sif Mem that that somebody has to be watching her, and that's basically the halachically the most important function of the mikveh lady. It's machlokas achron and whether the obligation is daraisa or darabanan. The Sidrei Tara, one of the achron holds it's daraisa. Actually, most achron I think hold it's darabanan. Rabbi Kiva Eger seems to say it's darabanan. It's not even in the Gemara, by the way, so it probably makes sense that it's more darabanan, but it's still clear that it has to be done. And Rabbi Kiva Eger says that if it's not done, he thinks that even b'dieved the tefillah's puzzle is invalid. Believe it or not, okay? If you didn't have somebody, even if she's all checked and if she didn't have the person watching her, then the mikvah the tefillah is invalid. Bottom line, if it really happened to you that you had to go to the ocean or this and that, and there's nobody else around, so you need to ask a shiloh. There is room to maybe be makil in certain situations, but that's definitely not l'chadchila, absolutely not l'chadchila, and maybe not even b'dieved, according to Rabbi Kiva Eger. So, you know, it's clear from here that at least for that part of it, that there needs to be a mikvah lady in terms of the halachic aspects. So, you know, there's not really much to talk about. The question is, how did that play itself out? So, you know, so just watch the news and see. But I just add one more point, and then if you have any other comments, well, please.
I think there's a little other point that you didn't make, that, which I think is also equally important by having a balat meat. At least in the States, it was an issue with domestic violence. I mean, when I was in the DA's office, that was the balat meat is one person that really, you know. So, I mean, as a society, as a community, if everyone's using a balat meat, I think on Chas v'Shalom we should have to deal with these issues, but the issues come up. If everyone's using it, that could have actually save a woman's life. So it's also something to think about. Balani is in the best position to spot the issues of domestic violence. So if the community is engaged with the Balani and everyone's doing it, fine. But if, you know, just one quick question.
Can I just make my last point? I don't take more questions if you want. Just the last one I was just going to make is just not halacha, but just idea behind it, meaning the point of the Balani being there, both in terms of watching the tefillah and also checking, is to make sure that the tefillah is valid. So I think just hashkafically, it makes sense that if, you know, the idea here is we want to make sure that you get it right. We want to make sure that the tefillah is good. And I think that anybody who wants to make sure that they're careful about halacha and that nothing is going to go wrong about such a serious issue, you know, where if she's still a nida after the tefillah, if it doesn't work, and then chas v'shalom, she has relations with her husband, when it's usher d'oraisa, serious repercussions, you know, you would think that you want to get all the help you can and have somebody help. Now, again, obviously there's issues, it's uncomfortable, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm just saying in terms of the idea, you know, hashkafically also, it's important to remind yourself of why she's there, to make sure that, you know, that you're not going to mess up. It's not worth the risk, I think, to not have her there. The woman's, it's her responsibility to make sure that she's tahor. Because if she goes to her husband and she says, I'm tahor, I went to the mikvah and everything is good, we believe her. Okay, the husband can believe her. So that's her responsibility. If she's not doing it right, then she may be held, you know, accountable afterwards. So again, obviously it's a more complicated issue, but in terms of halach, I think that's what I wanted to say. Any other comments to add to that? Should she make one? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are certain situations maybe not, but in general, absolutely. Generally, almost always. Yeah.
Quick question. I was just wondering, for the guys that go up to Har Habayit, which I don't do, but and they go to the mikvah and they say a bracha, does the same issue of balani would apply to them? Like, do they have to have someone watch them? Or is it a different type of tefillah?
Probably. Tell me if the main issue there is the hair. I'm assuming for men, the hair is not a problem. It's not bad to have somebody check you just to make sure, but I don't think the halachic issues are the same. Issue. The chatzis are the same. I mean,
the chatzis are the same, but there's no reason to have, there wouldn't be the same halachic issues as that. Okay.
And to be honest, I haven't read all the pamphlets. I wouldn't think so. Meaning, as long as the person checks himself well, I think that's good enough. But again, I haven't researched it well enough. If somebody says otherwise, I wouldn't know.
You can certainly have men with hair issues. Maybe.
Yeah, I was just wondering. Okay.
Part of, I think, the issue is also, along with what Yitzhak said, since this is something that every woman does on a regular basis, it needs to be a communal institution of a balanit. You need to have it as a routine manner. Not, you know, this one besides yes, this one besides no. It's got to be something which is accepted. That's part of the Shulchan, in addition to this specific case, but it's also important as a communal to have it. And we're very much into a generation, everyone's focused on their own personal. Right. That's part of the issue.
Good point.
And the case of a person going to Harabai, you're talking about an occasional something which just select at this point, a small group of people in a special setting, and it's not. If it's less of a...
Okay.
Good point. Okay. Next issue. Let's move on to one or two issues about Veses. Okay, meaning one specific issue about before a woman is Tahor right now, during the period when she's Tahor, and she's going to get her period very, very soon. So there's a halacha that we pass. Again, there's a lot of stuff here, obviously, which I'm skipping. Just one particular point, that you're supposed to do what's called Prisha Samach Leveses. You're supposed to separate, husband and wife should separate from each other a certain amount of time before you expect the period to come, which we're not going to talk about tonight, how that works in all the different bestos, the bestos achodesh and haflaga and all that. We're going to skip that for now. But you're supposed to separate a period of time before that. And the question that is asked is, what's that period of time? So most folks can say it's 12 hours, meaning whatever time, there's either a daytime or a nighttime. You look at one of the two, and if, let's say, the tefillah is expected, the vessus is expected in the daytime, so then you would go, you know, backwards to the night before. So basically, you would only look at the time period that the period is supposed to take place. That's what most poskim say. The Or Zarua has a very famous opinion where he says it has to be even more than that. Basically, he says it has to be a 24-hour period, roughly. Again, basically, what it means is that whatever time period is the Veses. So let's say it's during the daytime. The night before would also be a problem, meaning they would have to separate the night before as well, according to the Or Zarua. And if it's at the Veses at nighttime, so anyway, the nighttime would be off limits anyway. So there's a question which way to follow, which way to hold in terms of this. Both opinions are legitimate. It's not at this point, you know, it could be that it's not the biggest deal, and you know, it's, you may already have a custom. Just the question of that's also machlokas that I was going to get to in a second. The issue of the Or Zarua is mainly in terms of having relations. Okay, mainly in terms of having relations. And again, people go both ways. If you already have a specific custom about it, to do it or not to do it, either way is fine. But if you don't have a custom for whatever reason, then you know it's not a bad chumrah to take, even though there's not really so much of a basis for it in the Gemara. The main reason for it is because today we don't really know when everybody has what's called Veses Sheino Kavua. Nobody has set periods anymore. At least most people don't. So since you don't know exactly when it's going to take place, so we're machmir the night before just to make sure. So if you don't have a custom, it's not a bad idea to take it on, but you don't have to. If you're going to take it on, also you have to make sure that, as you say, it's bli neder for whatever reason something comes up. But again, it's one shita. It's not the end of the world. Really, either opinion is okay, but it's something to think about if it's something which works for you. Together with that, there's also a machlokas whether this includes affectionate contact, what's called chibuk benishuk. So here also many poskim say that it does not, meaning that even if there's not having relations is something which you would do during this period, but having affectionate contact would be permissible. And some, like the Shach and a few others, say that that should also be included. So here again, one can be machmir, and it's not a bad idea to be machmir. It's a good thing to be machmir, but it may not be required. Okay, there's two different, customs here. If you have one specific custom, it's fine. Now, if you're looking for something to go for, again, if it's something which is not a big deal to you, to take it on, as something which you're going to take on, bli neder. So again, it's not a bad idea to take on this custom with the Shach as well. But again, it's not something which is an absolute, meaning it's not like everybody says you have to do it. There's different customs in different places. Not required. You can choose one or the other. There are different shittas, but good. Okay. Last issue. This one, I was going to talk about chatzitza, but I think we're going to skip that one for tonight. If anyone has questions about chatzitza, we'll talk about it a different time. A brief survey of some issues that come up in terms of birth control. Okay, this is probably the most common question, at least that I hear about. Not usually me, but usually through my wife. The most common question that she gets always has something to do with birth control of some sort or another. So we're not going to go through everything now, obviously. We only have a few minutes left, but just a little bit of a survey of some of the issues that, at least from my perspective, are somewhat common. So let's talk about, we'll talk about the two main ones, at least that we hear about, which one is the pill and the other one is IUDs. There's quite a few of them, by the way. You should just know they're, obviously, I'm sure you know, there are quite a few different kinds of birth controls as well, which we're not going to get to tonight. There's other ones which are less halakhically problematic, some that are more. Most of the ones that people use are, you know, usually okay. Some people have a ring or a patch, or there's also a diaphragm, which I think is in Israel is not used so often. There's a bunch of other things as well. But these two, I think, are the, you know, very, most of the time, these are the most common ones. So we'll focus on these two for a couple of minutes. In terms of the pill, okay, so...
You don't want to start with whether it's allowed at all?
I do, but I'm not sure what to say. Meaning
if it is allowed, this is what you would do.
Right, so the bottom line is that there's a big question about whether birth control is allowed. The bottom line is usually that for people that have already had a certain number of kids, that it's generally it generally is allowed. But the only thing I would add, and this is very personal, and I'm not sure that we could spend a lot of time talking about this, and every case is different, is that just, you know, think about, you know, think twice before you decide that you're not having any more kids. Okay, we're not going to get into any more other than that. Definitely worth what, right. I mean, I guess that's a good point that Rolani is saying. Many people think that's not really a question for asking a Shiloh. And the bottom line is it probably is. Okay, I mean, it's probably a really good question to ask a Shiloh. It doesn't mean that you're not entitled to your opinion. It doesn't mean that, you know, you know better than somebody else, you know, what's going on at home, whether you can handle another child or not. But because the mitzvah of Puruvu, and even after you fulfilled Puruvu by having a son and a daughter, there's additional mitzvos that you may be familiar with. The Gemara talks about the La'erav al Tanach Yadecha, that you should have, you know, even when later in life, you should not stop having children. Again, you know, do you have to? There's a mitzvah. Obviously, if you go crazy, you can't do it. It's too hard. You're too old. It's dangerous. You know, whatever it is, obviously, there are a lot of considerations. That's understood. But at the same time, if you think, well, I can't have one more, but maybe you could, it's worthwhile to discuss it with, you know, a mentor, or at least to discuss it very seriously, even if you thought not. Again, that's all I'm going to say, I think, unless you think we should discuss it more. It's worth a lot to think about, because having children is very, very important. And sometimes you can handle more than you think. At the same time, if you think your kids are not getting enough attention, not that they're, you know, but they're really not, they really can't spend enough time with each one, so obviously, you know, other considerations obviously are very legitimate. But the point is, it's something to think about, okay? It's not just, again, it's already made for some people, this already may be, you know, something you thought about 10 years ago and already it's way too late now, but just, you know, it's something that should be considered, even if it's already, whatever it is, think about it twice and then decide whatever you're going to decide. Once you've decided that that birth control is going to be used, so the following questions would come up. Number one, birth control, the pill often causes a lot of spotting. Okay, it depends on who, some more than others. Sometimes for the first few months, more than later than that, meaning sometimes it'll go away after a few months. Something definitely to talk to your doctor about, which, again, I'm sure people know. But sometimes the doctors can help, change the dosage, change this, change that. Sometimes it can't help. So just in terms of the rules of NIDA, so basically the regular rules of NIDA apply here as well. Okay, meaning basically, again, this is very bekitzer, just the highlights here. If the woman is tahor, meaning she's during her period of tahara, she's not in a period of state of NIDA at that time. So then basically the general custom is that if she sees blood, usually she'll be wearing colored undergarments. So the halacha is that if there's colored undergarments, then it's usually okay, meaning she's not tameh. 2 points on that she'd be aware of. Was it? Yeah, that's second. Hold on, that was the second point. The first point I was just going to say is that, I guess that actually the first point, that if it's just spotting, if it's a larger amount of blood, then she should ask a Shiloh. Okay, she should speak to her, or he should speak to, one of them should speak to the Rav, or possibly Yoetze, depending on who the person is, who likes to speak to my wife and who likes to speak to Rabbanim. Either one is fine, obviously. I should say, obviously, either one, in my opinion, either one is fine, but whatever, you know, whatever is done. Basically, if it's a larger amount of blood, so usually what's, just to tell you the general idea, but again, you have to speak to a specific, you know, specific case, specific question. Usually, most poskim say that even if it's a large amount of blood, like more than a gris, okay, meaning like a big stain, usually speaking, that'll still be not, meaning she'll still be tahor, she won't be tameh. The main problem is basically when she gets to a point that it's basically like a whole regular flow. Meaning if she's almost at the point where she saw enough blood that would have been what she saw as like a major part of her period. So then already that's when, you know, a lot of poskim say that it's a problem. If it's less than that, so it's usually okay, but the problem is that the line is a little bit gray here. It's not so clear where do you draw the line. It's a sort of an estimation, that idea. And even that is not so clear. Well, what does that mean, a full period? Is like the first day of the period, the third day of the period? How many pads did you put on? There's all sorts of different things. And, you know, my wife always says in terms of this question that the Rabbanim just don't understand how these things work, so they can't really answer. So I said, okay, you're right. I agree with you, but what am I going to do? You know, what do you say? That's what she said when, you know, we spoke to Rabbi Weitzman once from Machon Pua, and he was saying these things, and he knows what he's talking about. And she's like, yeah, but that's a man talking. That's not a woman talking. So Anyway, just that's something to be aware of. A question should definitely be asked if it's more than a small amount of blood when it comes to that type of thing. But again, a lot of the time, unless it's a real flow, like close to a period, there generally is room to be made. Killed. The only other point, the second point I was going to mention, is that it's often recommended to wait, to abstain from relations for 24 hours. If that happens, and that's true, by the way, for any spotting, not just for this, just because you don't know what's going to happen next, meaning maybe it will turn into a full period, maybe it won't. So many poskim, again, it's not halacha, it's a recommendation, but many poskim, you know, say this, that it's recommended to, you know, to abstain for 24 hours. How much blood do you have to see to do that? Some people say if it's only a small amount, you should abstain. Some people say only if it's more than a gris, you should abstain. Again, it's worthwhile to ask a question. There, direction. Both directions are, you know, there is what to talk about. To abstain, if it's, you know, some people even say 48 hours. Personally, I don't recommend 48 hours, but definitely 24 hours. If it's a tiny little spot, maybe you don't have to do that. But definitely, if you see a little bit of blood, there's definitely what to say for abstaining. Again, that does not include affectionate contact. Just talking about actual relations would be included in that issue. That's one thing I wanted to mention in terms of the pill, in terms of the time of tahara. Yeah.
The period of having tahara that happened to the time when you would expect Nesef.
So that's already a little more severe. I mean, there you have to be a little more machmir about it, because if she's expecting anyway, so then, you know, it could be that's part of the period, and anyway, maybe they should definitely abstain. And anyway, maybe she should be abstaining at that time. Again, without, there could be more details there, but that's, you know, definitely, in general, people are posting more machmir about that period. I just mentioned other quickly about when she's tummy, meaning if she has problems with spotting when she's tummy. So then the issues are, well, how does she become tahor? So then you have to talk about, well, does she need to have some of the leniencies, meaning usually she does two bedikas every day, but if she's spotting a lot, or if she's seeing blood on her bedika cloth. So then again, it's something which is recommended to discuss with, again, a rav or possibly a wetzet, exactly what to do. But there are kulas to be used, and that's why it shouldn't just be that she just doesn't do anything. She just says, okay, I'll wait. It's something she should discuss. If it keeps coming up, well, sometimes you can get rid of some of the bedikas. You can get rid of, you know, two bedikas a day. You can get rid of some of the days and only do 1 and 7 and probably 3 or 4 in the middle. That's another discussion, not for now. But Machon Pua is they're very strong in saying that you shouldn't just do the day 1 and day 7, which are the most important ones. You should do a day in the middle in case you forget, so that you don't get totally stuck. But whatever it is, there are kulas that are involved here, and one should definitely consult when it comes to that type of situation. Okay, any other questions? I have one more, but I want to talk about IUD for a minute, if we have about 1 minute left. Maybe we'll wait to give it another 5 minutes, just a couple points about IUD. Okay, very, very briefly. And there's a lot of stuff here we should talk about. I'm just going to mention a couple brief points. When it comes to IUD, so we've had this question a number of times in terms of what happens when you IUD causes bleeding. So you could divide that question into, I guess, two parts, really. Number one, when IUD is put in for the first time, so that often causes bleeding. So that bleeding, again, you should always talk to your doctor. When it happens, talk to the doctor, ask the doctor, is it expected that blood is going to come out? Often the answer will be yes, maybe not always. Basically, if she bleeds immediately after having an IUD inserted, so then in general, it's usually assumed that blood is called dam maka. That's basically blood from a wound from the IUD being inserted, and therefore she would not be tummy. I'm assuming she's already tahor. She would not become tummy from that blood, and even if it's during her nida period also, if it's clear, the doctor says definitely she could bleed, and it's shortly afterwards, so many postmen would say that that's not a problem of nida, at least for the short period afterwards. How long is that? So it depends on the case. You have to consult. Definitely for that day probably is included. The next day is already a question. You really have to hear the details of the case to know exactly. That's generally the way that it works. If it's already a couple days later, so then already the second question is, in general, when you bleed, when from an IUD, often IUD does cause bleeding for a couple months afterwards. That's a big question. Is that blood hormonal blood, or is it dam maka? Is it caused from a wound from the IUD moving around? So it's not clear. Okay, the doctors have been arguing about this for, I think, years now. It seems la halacha that most poskim say today that we generally are machmir and consider blood caused from an IUD to be hormonal blood, and therefore you have to treat that blood like dam nida, and then all the regular rules apply. Meaning if she's tahor, then the question is how much did she see? If she's tame, so you have to figure out, you know, if it's on her, you know, if she's seeing spotting, then, you know, how much did she see? Is it a gris? How big is the stain? By the way, for those of you who don't know, the size of a gris is approximately the size of an American penny. If I have one at home, if you need to use it, I mean, you should always consult about these things, but just, we do happen to have one at home for these purposes. Again, we're not going to go into all that right now, just that's you know, something to be aware of in terms of IUD. The other point about IUD I would just make, actually a lot of points, but one other point, there's a question, some of the kinds of IUD And some of the other types of birth control also basically reduce a NIDA period to a very, very small amount of blood every month. So it's almost like just a little bit of a drop or a very small amount, not a full period. Okay, without getting into details of which ones and who's using it, but basically there's a halakhic question about if she only sees, based on that birth control, she only sees a very small amount of blood every month, is that considered to be a real period or not? And the answer is it's a machlokas. Many post hold that it's not. That if she doesn't see a full period, she just sees what they call a tipachod sheet, a little bit of blood every month. So then that's not counted as a nida period. She would not have to count the rules of nida at all. And other poskim, that Machon Pua holds that way, Mordechai Eliyahu and a number of others, Rav Yashav and a number of Willick holds this way, they're machmir, and they say that if she sees the same amount of blood every month on a regular basis, so that's what's called kedarka. That's considered to be her period, and she would have to be machmir for all the regular cases of nida. Halach Lamayis, again, either opinion is legitimate. I think personally, if you ask me, personally, the Machon Pua opinion is more accepted in our circles, that you would not have to be machmir for that type of blood. But it's worthwhile to ask a question. If you have this question, it's worthwhile to ask. And even the machmirim, yeah. Yeah. I'm saying if you're talking about if you're doing a.
Right, I'm just saying.
Yeah. Like correct. Blood, yeah.
Blood
right.
This means in whatever context, a kesef
right.
would be allowed.
Right. Right.
So even if it happens to happen on a regular basis, even if it happens to happen on a monthly basis, but still falls
right.
within the.
Right.
Within the realm of the
right.
that we've been committed.
Right, right. That's the problem of just doing certain halachas. Right, 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 right. Again, hopefully that's something that we are familiar with, but just to review that point very quickly, if you see blood on a bedikah cloth, then obviously it's very problematic. You should ask a question also, because maybe it's not reddish, but you know, that's generally a problem. We're talking about spotting. Spotting, again, the rule is that it has to be a gris in order to be a problem, according to most poskim. So that's the situation which we're talking about here, which is what Rav Orlean is saying. If it's less than a blood flow, and certainly less than a gris, then it would be okay. We had one case once where somebody asked us, I think they wanted to be machmir. I mean, they had a trouble not having a needed period every month. The question was, can they be machmir if they want to be machmir? So then we were basically discussing, it depends on the situation. If it's something which was very regular every month, then the answer is probably yes. But if it's something, well, some months yes, some months no, some months this much blood, some months a lot less blood, that already, even the machmir might not be machmir in that situation. Again, it's worthwhile to consult in those kinds of situations. Last point about birth control, especially when it comes to the pill, in terms of if you're on the pill and then your period is going to come, so the question is, how long before the period comes do you have to wait for your vessus? You expect the period to come. How do you figure out a vessus based on the pill? A big, big question. The bottom line is that most poskim say that you should wait approximately about 48 hours beforehand. Again, there are different versions here, 24 hours, 72 hours. But basically, you know, the time when she knows based on the pill, based on the instructions, she should be getting her period anytime from this day and on. So in general, most poskim say it's best from at least 48 hours beforehand to already abstain as if that was your vessus. Because it might come afterwards. But again, there are different opinions about that as well. So you know, there may be room to discuss it if that's not something you've been doing. If you have a different opinion that you heard about, you know, that may be fine also. Okay, any other questions before we wrap up for tonight?
In terms of the IUD, person should adopt, should also be aware of which is coupled. Same, because some of them have significant ramifications on
that. Right, yeah.
Some of them doesn't typically work with religious people. That's probably less common nowadays. But
right.
Sometimes you know, you have to know which there's a gamut of which
right.
shows.
Right.
And for religious couples, it's important to choose one that will not
right.
make some
right.
stuff at night.
I think most gynecologists are aware of the questions, but you may have to remind them. You may have to tell them we're religious and can you help us, you know, find the things that spot the least, you know, have the least problems. And they'll have to, sometimes you have to try it out. You don't always know beforehand, but if it's something that's on their radar screen, then, you know, then you can work with it. Point. Okay. Yasher koach, everybody. So we're going to try again next week at the same time. The topic next week is supposed to be interactions between men and women in different forms, gestalt-less, maybe, you know, talking, all stuff like that. The speaker is to be announced. I guess probably it's going to be me, unless somebody else has an idea who wants to give it instead.
Thanks to Josh Navy for the kibbutz.
Shkoach, yeah, thank you very much. Okay. One other point before you run away. So just very quickly.
You're doing next week?
Yeah,
that's it.
We'll look
forward to your one other quick point. So one, I think I didn't mention this on the thing, but